Hello, just a quick message from Sam here. We just wanted to say a big thank you to everyone who's been listening to the podcast and getting in touch with us. We hope to continue to deliver some great content as we continue to watch films and make new episodes. Please continue to get in touch through our email, thebenefitofhindsightpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your thoughts, questions and opinions on the episodes and on the films that we're watching. Follow us on Twitter at thebenefitofhindsightpodcast or at @TBOHindsightPod. We post updates on the films and a record of our scores. We'll keep adding exciting and interesting things as we go. So without further ado, here is our latest episode. Enjoy!
Dean and Sam, keeping it true, watching old movies so you don't have to. With the
Good evening, and welcome to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, the movie podcast in which a father and son talk about movies that they watched together long ago. We give the movie a memory score, and then re-watch the movie and see whether or not the movie is better or worse than we remember. With me, as ever, is my son Sam. Good evening, Sam.
Good evening, Dad. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you this week?
Happy to be recording, and very happy to not be watching Indiana Jones 4.
More on that. More on that later. Indy 4. What a movie. Let's go straight to the emails. We've had a couple of emails this week. First email we've had is from Grant in Marbella. And Grant asks a very simple question and gives us some really nice feedback on the podcast. So thanks very much for that, Grant. But he asked a simple question. How do we choose the movies that we're going to watch each week?
I don't know if we've necessarily got a way of choosing them per se, not specifically anyway. Obviously, they're all films that we watched together when I was younger in the cinema, so we've got at least, I don't know, like 12 years worth maybe. I don't know if that's even close. But yeah, it's just a case of what we're feeling. So for the last few, we started off with Star Wars The Phantom Menace because it's a great place to start for it. Then we watched one of your favourites, which is a nice one to jump into. Then one of my favourites, and now we're just sort of thrown back in the mix with a big budget movie. That's just a bit of fun. I don't know if there's any other way.
I don't think so. I mean, we don't really choose the movie until 5 minutes before.
Yeah, true.
And I think the point of that, if there is one, is when we give our memory score, the memory score has to be genuine. Okay, if we decide 2 weeks in advance which movie we're going to watch, then you've got time to process it. But we just sort of make it up as we go along with that point, don't we?
Yeah, it's interesting because we can't just sit there and go, oh, let's watch the next one without recording, because then it ruins the memory score, because then it's just going to be, I watched it yesterday, this is my score of it.
So, exactly. And we've had another email from Christina, who's in London. Doesn't say whereabouts in London Christina's from, but thanks very much for your email, Christina. Says very nice things about the pod. And Christina asked the question, if you could watch any movie in the cinema together that you hadn't watched, what would you watch?
Oh, interesting question that, actually, yeah. I think for me, in recent years, I would say Spider-Man No Way Home, because I think that had like a... obviously spoilers, but that had a big sort of nostalgia feel to it, bringing that back, the old Spider-Man. And I think that might be quite cool to revisit that with you as well, because I know we definitely saw the first three Tobey Maguire movies, so that would have been quite... I say the first three Tobey Maguire. We also saw both Andrew Garfield films together.
Yeah,
so it would have been really nice to sort of revisit that as an adult for both of us. That's my pick. Spider-Man No Way Home.
That's a good pick, because that movie was, I suspect, designed for people just like us, right?
Yeah, probably.
Who'd seen them all. The obvious one for me to say is Star Wars, okay? Because I saw the original Star Wars movies when they first came out. But they didn't have much impact on me at that point, I have to tell you. So, so I don't know that maybe they would be the ones, but I think the one that I miss that we didn't watch together would be Avengers Endgame.
There you go. That's a good one.
We did a lot of Avengers movies, and then, you know, people grow up and move on and things. But that was the one where I just thought, oh, we should have seen this one together, because all of what had happened in the previous, I don't know, God knows how many movies, 20, found its climax in that. So the obvious thing for me to say Star Wars, but actually I'm going to go with Avengers Endgame, which is,
I think that's an interesting one. I think that's an interesting one because it was sort of, when it had all started with Iron Man in 2008, I wasn't interested. So in a way, you kind of got me interested in them, and you'd seen a couple of them without me at that point. So it would be really nice to sort of do all of those again, I suppose. I think if I remember correctly, and this could be a spoiler for a future one, Iron Man 2 was my first IMAX experience.
Right.
So I remember that one quite fondly, especially. But
Okay.
Maybe that's a conversation for another day.
I think so. I hope that's answered both of your questions, Grant and Christina. Do keep emailing us. We do love to get your emails. And by the way, we've responded to every single one we've received so far.
We have.
Our email address is thebenefitofhindsightpodcast@gmail.com. So shall we move on to the 2008 Steven Spielberg classic, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull?
I suppose we have to.
For those of you who are following the podcast, and for those of you who haven't been, this is your first time, we give the film a memory score. What do we remember from the film? And then we go and we re-watch it. I gave this movie 1 out of 10. What did you give it, Sam?
I gave it a 3 out of 10. Almost went for a 4, but it was a bit too generous.
So, and then we average it out. So it scores 2 out of 10. Which is pretty low down on the scale of movies.
So
then we went away, we watched it again. I'm going to ask you first, Sam, you gave it 3 out of 10?
I did, yeah.
Fair or unfair? After you.
For a memory score, I think that was quite fair. I remembered a few plot points about it and a few character moments that I particularly liked. So I think the positive memories that I had from it were definitely up there for the memory score, but maybe the negative ones were forgotten for a good reason.
So one of the things I thought, the first thing I noticed that was missing in the movie was this, okay? So if you think of all the other Indiana Jones movies, there's always a small adventure at the beginning of them, okay?
Yes.
And the one that stands out most obviously, I mean, there are two classic ones. You've got the one in Raiders of the Lost Ark with the idol, and in Indy 3, you've got young Indiana Jones looking for the Cross of Coronado and those things. And the start of Indiana Jones 4 is he's been kidnapped by the Russians from doing what?
Yeah, I think one thing that sort of confused me about that scene as well is as soon as they get him out of the boot of the car, he's like, oh, it's Russians. But like, how did he not know who captured him in the first place? He just like randomly appeared in the back of the car and was like, oh.
And what was he doing when he was captured? So we don't find out how he got there. And I felt that was missing. So you kind of missed that prologue and things like that. And I kind of get why they did that. You know, it's iconic, the hat, you know, the shadow on the car and things like that. There's an iconic image that they show. But there's no explanation as to what he was doing, why he was there, and we're straight into, you've been captured by the Russians and you're in Hangar 51, which presumably is just a reference to Area 51.
Yeah, it almost feels like they sort of forgot in a way. I think this might be the film, I could be wrong about this, it could be the fifth one. This might be the one where they forgot to transition the shot from the Paramount logo to the movie. Mm-hmm. So they added that in very late was it the chipmunk or something like that?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, chipmunk does the mountain, yeah.
So it almost just feels like they had an idea for a movie and didn't know where to start. So yeah, it's weird.
Did you know that every movie that we have talked about so far was nominated for Oscars?
Oh, wow. I think, well, you've mentioned it, but yeah, it's a weird coincidence.
Phantom Menace, King Kong, Hugo nominated for 11. So how many Oscars do you think this movie was nominated for?
At least 2, surely. For something.
2, okay. None.
Wow. Okay, that makes sense though, yeah.
It was nominated for a BAFTA, which is the British equivalent of an Oscar for Best Visual Effects. The award it won was, do you know?
Best costume, and maybe?
It won. It was nominated for Best Special Effects of BAFTA, didn't win. But it did win, is it, they're called the Razzie Awards? Raspberry Awards?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Razzie, yeah, I think it's Razzie.
It won that for worst prequel, sequel, / remake of the year.
Wow.
Do you think that's fair?
I think that's fair. I was just about to say, I think that's fair. I can see that being
high. We talked about this in the sort of preamble in the last episode. It is a crushing disappointment, this movie, isn't it?
It really is, yeah.
But let's talk about why. What is it? What's most disappointing about this film for you?
I kind of went on a journey with this movie, and it kind of is reflected very much in my notes that it's the first sort of hour or so feels like they're trying to do an Indiana Jones movie, and there's all this updated technology and things like that. So there's always going to be a bit of a difference, but I could easily watch the first hour of that movie and enjoy it. But then it's the bit where they get to Mutt is your son, these are aliens, and that's where I lose interest. It just doesn't work any more past that point. And it's a shame, because the Shia LaBeouf, Harrison Ford sort of banter that they had between them was really good, and it was quite compelling, and then it just derails from there. It's like, it doesn't work.
He's a decent enough actor as well, right, Shia LaBeouf? I mean, I remember when the movie came out, Steven Spielberg was enormously complimentary of him, said he was the next Errol Flynn. You know, he had the whole world at his feet. Obviously, it didn't pan out that way for him. But he is decent in the movie. And I also, we'll come back to this because I'm sure we'll get to this movie. We watched Transformers as well, and he's actually pretty good in that as well, right?
Yeah, I think there's definitely moments where he's quite good in that, when you look past the whole shout and screaming part of it, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Actually, interestingly enough, this year I watched Holes for the first time, and he's quite good in that. I really enjoyed him in that.
So he's a good enough actor, and you're right, that rapport that they have is pretty funny. You know, they're good in the chase scenes and things, but it does get a little bit implausible. There's a sense, isn't there, when you watch the movie, that maybe there's going to be a passing on of the baton from Harrison Ford. His last hurrah is Indiana Jones. Why not pass it on to his son, Mutt, also named after a dog? You know, why not pass that on? Because he is classic action hero of the time. If you like, you know, with the thing with the hair and the comb and whatever, he's clearly got some skill set that sets him apart. We can come back to that in just a moment. But there was a sense that they felt like they were going to pass the baton on.
Especially at the end, yeah.
Yeah, they just didn't do it. Do we know why they didn't do it? Do we know why they didn't have Shia LaBeouf go off and have his own adventures as Mutt Jones?
I think, is it not because of the way Shia LaBeouf spoke about the film after it was made, when everyone just sort of went, right, we're not dealing with him anymore, because he slated it, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He did say some really negative things. I think he said...
I think he apologised as well.
I think he came out and said, I apologise for what we've done to this classic trio of movies. And Steven Spielberg described him, when he said that, as a stupid little boy.
That's right, yeah.
It doesn't feel very Steven Spielberg, that, does it? The other thing about Shia LaBeouf and the character in the movie is how brilliant he is at everything that you couldn't possibly have seen coming. There's a line at the beginning of the movie that said, I went to private school, I did some fencing, I'm pretty good with the blade. Turns out he's amazing.
That is an interesting point, because I think a lot of people would, if that was a female, they would have called him a Mary Sue, being able to do everything. But I think because it's a different time and it's a man, it's not quite addressed like that at that point. But it is just immediately, I can do all of this. You could argue the same for Harrison Ford, because he's getting on in age and he can still do all of those stunts.
Yeah, No, I don't think you are. I mean, but the thing I found about the Shia LaBeouf character was, you're right. I mean, of course, within the context of the movie, he's allowed to do these things. He discovers he can swing like a monkey through a tree and be all amazing and sword fight and, you know, take on the might of the Russian army. So that's okay. The Indiana Jones point is a good one. When we watch the movie, I remember making the joke too. It's like Indiana Jones, but he's melted. Do you remember that?
That's right, yeah.
That was the joke, yeah. And it's really interesting how young he looked in the movie by comparison.
I thought the same thing, yeah.
To the one that I just watched.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there was a real attempt at cashing in on the nostalgia of Indiana Jones.
Yeah, I think, as I've mentioned briefly, is for me it felt like they were trying a bit too hard to capture the classic feeling of it, and it didn't quite land in some cases. What I did kind of appreciate, and this might be a bit jumpy too much, is the sound design they tried to match to the original three with all the sort of exaggerated cartoony punches and gunshot noises. So I did kind of appreciate that they didn't modernize it in that sense. But yeah, some of it just felt a bit wrong to me.
Yeah, my rewatch view is that I have a sense that there's a, imagine a Hollywood pitch meeting and they're pitching ideas at Paramount Studios, and there's some kind of junior executive in the corner that says, you know that Harrison Ford's still alive, still acting. Why not just do an indie remake? George Lucas is interested. Spielberg will direct. That movie's going to get the green light. There's no real creative urge for that to happen, but it's going to get green lighted. And before you know it, they've written this script, which is okay. How do you say it politely without making it a spoiler thing? But it's just, it's okay until the last 40 minutes. It just goes all wrong.
I'd say last hour, but yeah.
Obviously, they're fantasy movies. They're adventure classic fantasy movies, you know, and both George Lucas and Steven Spielberg would say, based on this idea of this sort of classic Saturday morning American cinema thing where you'd pay 50 cents to go and watch your hero do ridiculous things in the 1930s. And within that context, you'd get things like the Holy Grail, you'd get things like the Ark of the Covenant and whatever silliness happens in the Temple of Doom. And although they're obviously fantastic in the proper sense of the word, they kind of exist within the real world. There's a real world connection to those things, be it
That's true,
biblical
yeah.
or whatever. And in this one, it just goes so far off the map to interdimensional beings with glass skulls that you just think it's a step too far. Would you agree?
Absolutely. It's more of a leap too far, I think.
It's not quite a step, is it? It's a massive jump.
If you're trying to ground it in reality whilst also having fantasy, I think there's a lot of other things you could have done instead of aliens. And I think you easily could have had something very similar with the Crystal Skull, but didn't lead to aliens and all of this knowledge and a UFO. I think that there's a way that it could have worked. I kind of want to make a joke, but...
What's the joke?
I kind of just want to say it would be more believable if they had time travel.
Well, it might be, but that didn't work in Indy 5 either, so...
I thought it did.
okay, well, there's a conversation that we could have. Maybe that's the film we should have finally watched together. But there was a bit where they referenced the Roswell incident. And, you know, someone says, you know, you captured it in 1947 in The Aliens. And I thought that was quite good. That's quite nice because that is grounded somewhat in, and this is in big inverted commas, in reality. There's a real world thing that we can associate it with there. But they just seem to have forgotten that. It no longer seemed to be a relevant detail toward the end of the movie.
That is actually a really good point. Yeah, I think if they'd continued sort of having a bit of evidence here and there that sort of connected it and grounded it, it would have made more sense,
right? If Indiana Jones goes off into the New Mexico desert to uncover the remains of a Roswell incident flying saucer, and then they go fantastic from there, then that does make a kind of sense plot wise. I think we would agree, and it's not the most interesting podcast when people agree with each other, but plot wise, we think it's pretty ordinary, right?
Yeah, it's not. It doesn't jump out at you as something fantastical and amazing. It easily could have, but it misses that mark completely.
Does it have, in your view, any redeeming qualities? Is there anything positive you can say about the movie?
Oh, no, that's a tough one. I'm just looking at my notes here and basically no. I think certain aspects at the beginning, I'll just repeat really, is that the banter between Indy and Mutt really worked. I like the bit where they go in the cave. it's this good back and forth of trying to work together, but as well as having Indiana Jones more of a teaching role, like he feels like he falls back into the professor side of things to teach his student, and I like that rather than just having someone tag along who just asks the questions and.
That's my favorite. But that's my favorite line in the movie, when Mutt says, "Are you're a teacher," and Indy says, "Part time." I just love that
it's
bit.
brilliant.
That was the best bit
because
of the
you
whole
always
movie for
quoted
me.
it, and it was hilarious.
I know, that was literally my favorite bit. Part time. I never could quite figure out whether it was the best delivery of any line ever, or he'd just sort of given up, really.
It's
I could
just the
never
way
quite
he
figure
says
it
it is
out.
just the way he says it is just like it just flows and it's just perfect. It's as if Harrison Ford just said it as Harrison Ford.
Exactly that. It was good. I mean, even when we watched it originally, and even in memory, it was good to see Indiana Jones on screen again. I mean, why not? If Harrison Ford's still up for it, why not?
I always find it quite interesting how he's always up to do Indiana Jones, but just hates Han Solo. It's always been an interesting thing for me. But yeah, I mean, you can really see that he's determined to bring the character back to life, and he always wants to play that role, and I appreciate that. You don't get a lot of that these days. So
No,
that was
that's
definitely
true.
nice to see.
To what extent should we blame George Lucas for this movie?
Aliens. He thought it worked out mostly once. He might as well put some aliens in. I don't know how true that is, but
I mean, it's reasonably well directed by Spielberg. You're the film expert and I'm not, but it's nicely made. It's clearly Steven Spielberg. And I think even Steven Spielberg, I don't know, again, I think he's on record as saying he had reservations about the script.
Right, okay, interesting. I mean, it is, they made a film. It's not, someone must like it. So it's not as if it completely flopped and made the worst thing to ever exist.
It did not flop.
Oh.
It made an awful lot of money. Would you like to know how much money that it made at the box office?
Yeah, I'm not good with numbers, but sure.
So it had a budget of $185 million, and at the box office worldwide, it made $790.7 million to be
Oh, wow.
the fourth highest grossing world movie of that year. So it did well.
What do you think that is, though? Do you think that's star power because it's Harrison Ford, nostalgia because it's Indiana Jones, or something else? Maybe it's both.
I think it's both. I think it's definitely nostalgia. I mean, the mar if you you probably won't remember this, but the marketing campaign for it relied incredibly heavily on nostalgia. So the,
Right,
and so you
okay.
know the so you know I was I don't know I think it was about 18 when the last movie came out. So 89 would make me 18, and then there's nothing for years, and then suddenly. I'm an adult with a teenage son, and I'm thinking, okay, Indiana Jones, let's go and experience this again for the first time. At this point, you've probably seen all the other three movies, either on DVD or on TV or whatever. But it was just that nostalgia, it was that ability to go and do something and share that experience. And I don't know whether or not that makes a contribution to how we feel about the movie. Strength of the movie, I did ask a question about something that I thought was good. John Williams.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he never misses, does he? I mean, I do have a one bit of criticism about it, but I don't think it's necessarily his fault. And it plays on the nostalgia thing again, is that I've written it down as the indie jingle, you know, the big theme song that everybody loves. I think from my memory, the first three movies, that's not necessarily used as he's done something big. It's just a little every now and then, like it's not just shoved into the action movies when it's needed. Whereas in Crystal Skull, it's very much he's done the whip, there it is. He's put the hat on, there it is. And it was a bit too in my face rather than it has been previously. And I always appreciated that in the first three, but then this one it was just a bit too much. But when it wasn't doing that, I really enjoyed the music.
Yeah, John Williams is great. I think you're right. There was the how would I describe this? I'm gonna have to do the sound effects or the music, but you know, if Indy does something heroic, you get the full on do 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 do. If he does something mysterious, if you get something mysterious, it goes do 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 do. It's basically just a slight variation on the last note, you know, just to qualify what's happening. Also, criminally underused in the movie was John Hurt. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I've made a note of that as well, saying that it was such a shame that they wasted his character. And it's not that he just didn't try. It's just he had a character that was written in a way that you could have got someone else who's like of less fame to do that role. It's just, he kills it towards the end where he gets actual lines. But the rest of it, I feel so sorry for him.
Yeah, he's got nothing to do, right? He just sits around repeating nonsense and staring, probably thinking, you know, keep talking, you're getting paid. He doesn't have a great deal to do.
It's also a shame as well, because Mutt's character is so invested in Oxley that you want it to work out when they meet and it just doesn't. And I suppose it does sell it, but it's just, it feels so lifeless and emotionless.
Yeah. But again, you know, I think that's... That well-known cliche, isn't it? You're only as good as the script, and I think it is the script that lets it down. A couple of nice things, though. I mean, I've asked about things that save the movie. They are just little flashes. There's a bit at the beginning of the movie when Harrison Ford is talking to Jim Broadbent in his role as the kind of director of the university, and Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones says, "Tough year, first Marcus, then Dad." And there's a little kind of nod then to the Den O'Malley and Sean Connery, who had both passed away or at least had stopped making movies up until that point, and sort of explained why they weren't going to be in the movie. I actually think Sean Connery hadn't passed away, but Den O'Malley had. So I'll just correct myself there. But yeah, just a nice way. And I actually think that's probably the one moment where the script works. You've got an issue. You want to just explain why they're not there. You can do it in a line. Bang. Move on.
It's a nice bit of visual storytelling there where it sort of dwelt on the image of Sean Connery and sort of told the audience what he was thinking and who he was thinking about in that moment. So it really helped that bit. And now, a word from this week's sponsor. Are you looking for a unique and captivating piece of jewellery that will make you stand out from the crowd? Look no further. Introducing our exquisite Crystal Skull Jewellery Collection. Our Crystal Skull Jewellery is not just an accessory. It's a statement. Crafted with precision and attention to detail, each piece is a work of art that will add a touch of mystique to your style. Whether you're attending a special event or simply want to add a touch of glamour to your everyday look, our Crystal Skull Jewellery is the perfect choice. It's versatile, edgy, and guaranteed to turn heads wherever you go. Made from high-quality materials, our Crystal Skull Jewellery is designed to last. The intricate designs and sparkling crystals will never fail to catch the light and make you shine. But it's not just about the aesthetics. I think our crystal skull jewellery is believed to possess positive energy and healing properties. It's a symbol of strength, protection, and transformation. So why settle for ordinary when you can embrace the extraordinary? Step into a world of elegance and mystery with our Crystal Skull Jewellery Collection. But don't just take our word for it. Listen to these reviews.
Disappointed? The stone isn't anywhere near as bright and vibrant as the pictures advertised. I thought it would really pop against a black dress, but sadly, disappointed. Fell apart as soon as I put it around my neck. Not impressed.
The clasp broke that holds. Chain is also really cheap looking, and feeling and rips out your hair. Rubbish.
Well made. Does it look like it will fall apart in 5 minutes? Looks good on. As for the healing, I must have a lot of damage, as it's done nothing. Laughing face.
Visit our website or come to our store today to explore our stunning range of Crystal Skull jewellery. Unleash your inner rebel and let your style speak volumes with our one-of-a-kind pieces. Crystal Skull jewellery. Because you deserve to shine. I think...
I should say that based on the back of watching Indy 4, I kind of felt like I needed to purge myself of that movie. So I went back and watched Indy 3. Which is The Last Crusade. Yeah. And notwithstanding some fairly questionable special effects, it being the late 1980s, it's so much better. It's such a good film. I mean, the Indiana Jones film themselves, in my view, is two really good ones, one ordinary one and two that aren't very good. But that's by some degree, in my view, that's the best one. So if you haven't been able to purge yourself of Indy 4, I totally recommend going to watch Indy 3. It will make you feel so much better.
probably will, yeah. I think I've got quite fond memories of growing up as a kid where we would sit and watch them together, as you've sort of alluded to anyway. So going to see this one was a big thing. And I do remember how disappointed you were in this one, and that sort of rubbed off on me in a way. Not to, like, in a negative way, you've ruined it for me, but I just agreed because I just knew at that point that it just wasn't the same.
I'm pretty confident I wore an Indiana Jones hat to the movies when we went to watch it.
I don't know if you wore it there, but you definitely bought one.
I definitely bought one. Yeah, probably.
I also had a kid's one, which was ruined because a cat weed on it. I don't know if you remember that.
I do not remember that. But I would like to say that you don't get that kind of material in an ordinary movie podcast, do you? I had an Indiana Jones cat hat, and the cat peed on it. So that's why you should listen to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast. That's the level of detail that we give you.
Stories like this and more.
If you've listened to our podcast before, you'll know that we have a regular feature which is called Sam's Out-of-Pocket Take, and in which Sam will share with us a hot take from the movie. So, Sam, what is this week's out-of-pocket take?
My one is that Harrison Ford's sizing and fitting for all of his costumes was the same as it was for The Last Crusade.
Wow. So he hadn't, at no point in the previous, 20 years, had he put on weight or anything like that?
I know, I was quite surprised about that because it's not just, I'm not saying he got fat, but it's just like normal to put on weight as you get older. So it was quite a surprise.
Yeah, he looked like he'd melted. I think I've said that already. But
yeah.
Well, I mean, if you agree with that and you think that's true, great. If you think that Sam's made that out of pocket take up, then do drop us a message through the email or through our Twitter feed. But yeah, you said I had a better one. Mine's not really an out of pocket take. Mine is a fan theory. Would you like to hear my fan theory?
That's as out-of-pocket take as it gets for me.
So the fan theory behind this is that the whole Indiana Jones saga is actually Han Solo's dream while he's encased in carbonite.
Yeah, I think that one's true. As an opinion, definitely. It has to be.
Well, as I think it's a brilliant theory. It also would explain why there's a couple of Star Wars references in Temple of Doom, Cafe Obi-Wan, and things like that. But that might also be explained by the fact that George Lucas is involved in the whole sequence of movies. But I want it to be true.
But that's what makes it work, is that it can be connected because it's the same person behind it.
Correct.
So it makes sense.
Yeah, there's another one. If you think that Han Solo's dream, whilst encased in carbonite, was the Indiana Jones saga, then feel free to email and let us know. If you disagree with us, feel free to email as well. So anything else from your notes that you want to add to our commentary on Indy 4?
I do actually, yeah.
Go on then.
This isn't my conclusion for the score, but I did think this was very funny. There was a line pretty much at the end, where they're thinking about all the treasure and the fact that they didn't get any gold from the aliens being a thing, where Indiana Jones says, "Knowledge was their treasure." And yeah, that might be a great line, but to me it sort of says, "Knowledge was their treasure, and the real Crystal Skull is the friends we made along the way." And it just sort of, it felt really stupid.
Yeah, I have no adequate response to that. Because it does, as you say, feel really stupid.
There could easily have been an actual treasure if they didn't have aliens.
Right? Absolutely. Do you know, we talked about implausibility as well. I think this is probably the final thing I want to say about this wretched movie. We talked about implausibility. And there's so many scenes in this movie that really stretch credibility, credulity. I'm thinking of sword fights on the back of cars doing 70 miles an hour, a car that falls down four different massive waterfalls, a car where the top of the car is shaved off, but nobody in the other car is harmed in any way, shape or form. Did you pick up on that, or is that just me being really, really mean to the film?
No, I agree with that. I mean, with Indiana Jones, I've always had the sort of element of don't take it too seriously, because not as a comedy, but just as an adventure film, it's fun. You know, you're supposed to enjoy it. And if it's not believable, fair enough, it's a good time. But with this one, it just falls a bit flat. It goes a bit too far with the unbelievable.
It's almost implausible to the point of just being. It almost stops being entertaining and starts being quite irritating.
Yeah, absolutely.
I made the point in the King Kong episode, if you haven't heard that one, go back and check it out. I made the point in the King Kong episode that it really annoyed me when people would watch a whole movie about a giant ape and then say that it was unsafe for two people to be stood on top of the Empire State Building. It really annoyed me when people said things like that, because you've just watched this movie and that's the bit that you're worried about. And so I feel like I'm contradicting myself there. But Indiana Jones takes place in what we perceive to be the real world. And in the real world, people don't fall down three or four massive waterfalls in a car and then drag themselves to shore as if nothing's happened.
It's a bit ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's not ridiculous in the same way that a giant ball rolling down a chute is ridiculous in Indiana Jones 1. Mm-hmm. Or there's a knight that's been alive for 1,500 years in The Last Crusade. It's not ridiculous in that sense. It just stretches credibility in the real world. There you go. That's my final take on Indy 4.
That's a good final take.
Is there anything we haven't said about the movie that we really feel we should say before we move on to our Benefit of Hindsight rewatch score?
I mean, I suppose a quick point from me is that towards the end of the movie, again, it felt a bit too full of a cast. Like, I think it would have benefited better from having Indiana Jones and at least one other person, whereas it seemed a bit crowded with everyone, Oxley, the other guy, whose name escapes me.
I can never remember the actor's name. Ray Winston, the triple, double, That's quadruple right, yeah. agent with the most implausible role in movie history, because he's a double agent, so then he's a triple agent. Just so unnecessary. And you get this, they try to paint this picture of a background between the two guys and create a relationship between them. But there's nothing there, you know. Do you remember Warsaw or whatever? Well, no, we don't.
It falls flat, yeah.
Yeah, and we're not involved in Warsaw, so we don't care who you've done. So take that away, but yeah. Okay, so should we move on to the Benefit of Hindsight rewatch scores?
I think we should, yeah.
So I can't remember whoever goes first or second. Who went first or second the last time?
I can't actually remember either. Do you want me to go first this time?
Yeah, go on. Yeah, because I think
I may have gone
first
the last time. But
my rewatch score might depend a little bit on what you say. So you go first. You gave it a 3 from memory. Where are you now?
I did. So 3 from memory, because my memory served better. But watching it again, it was quite interesting. I sort of went on a journey with it. For the first hour, I was really enjoying it, as I've said, with the back and forth between Mutt and Indy and the little bit of adventure and some of the jokes here and there, like the one in the library where he tells him to read a different book and then hops on a motorbike. That was great. Really enjoyed it. So for the first hour or so, I was thinking, maybe my score's actually going to go up. But I thought, I can't. I know what's going to happen. And then it did happen with the aliens, and I didn't enjoy it. So if it did go up, it was never going to go past 5. That's what I'd set at.
Okay.
Unfortunately, it didn't. And I've ended up going for a 2 out of 10 instead, because it just didn't work for me in the end. I tried too hard to be the other 3, and when it did, it kind of worked, but it didn't enough. And the whole end of the movie completely ruined it for me. So yeah, 2 out of 10 from me now.
Okay, so you went from a 3. You went from a 3 to a 2. I gave it a 1 based on it being the most disappointing movie of all time. I hadn't watched it for years. My memory of it was I didn't particularly like it for all the reasons that you've said. I watched it again, and I think it's marginally better than I remember.
Okay, and wow.
The vagary of our scoring system is that I'm going to give it a 2, okay? Which would suggest that I think it's twice as good as my memory of it, and it isn't twice as good. But I'm going to go up to a 2. Okay, Is it one of the most disappointing things I've ever seen? Yes. Is it the worst move I've ever seen? No. So I'm going to go with a 2 because there has to be something like that. So our what we've done there, however, is not changed our overall opinion of the movie because it had a 1 and a 3 and therefore a 2. And now it's got a 2 and a 2 and therefore a 4. But you went down and I went up. So that is also quite interesting.
At least we gave it the chance of giving it a rewatch to see if it would change, though.
Is it the worst Indiana Jones movie?
Controversial, but I'm going to say yes.
Yeah, I think it probably is. I think it is a bit controversial because I've seen 5.
I think my standpoint is if you said you have to watch either Indiana Jones 4 or Indiana Jones 5, I would choose 5. It's not necessarily better. It's not necessarily worse. That would just be the one that I would choose.
Yeah, I think that's I think that's very true. And I think that's a good way to end our conversation about the Indiana Jones quadrilogy and Indy 4. And yeah, that's a good place to end that.
I agree, yeah.
So, Sam, what is your one-word review of Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull?
My one word is unfortunate. What's yours?
Oh, I thought long and hard about this. And the only word that I really can use to express it in my view is bad.
Okay, fair enough, yeah.
I mean, I could have gone disappointing, but I think I've already expressed that. So, yeah, my one-word review is bad. So our next movie, the next movie that we'll be watching, what have we decided to watch next, Sam? Why don't you tell the listener?
So we've decided to watch Cloverfield. No, I don't know if we're still keeping with that joke.
For those of you who haven't, for the first time listening to the podcast, I've ruined Sam's childhood with Cloverfield. I think we talk about it in episode 1 or episode 2. So we're not going to watch Cloverfield yet. But I think if we get enough people email and say that we should, we will watch Cloverfield. I am going to make you watch it again at some point.
I'll try. The real film that we're going to be watching next, because it's May, we decided to go back to Star Wars. We're going to watch the 2002 Star Wars Episode 2, Attack of the Clones, directed, of course, by George Lucas.
So, yeah, we're going to be doing the 2002 George Lucas classic, Attack of the Clones. And why not? Because it's May, and if we time this just right, I might actually be able to watch that movie on Star Wars Day, which would be cool, right?
That's true, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's other ones I'd prefer to watch, but yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's do this very briefly. Your memory of the film Star Wars Attack of the Clones, Sam?
So I think growing up, in my memory of this is that I preferred it to Phantom Menace, but I think maybe not so much anymore. I think my opinion might have changed quite a bit. So I think, just to keep it brief, I think my score for Attack of the Clones is going to be a 3 out of 10.
Okay. My memory score of Attack of the Clones, you have a slight advantage because I don't think I've watched this film. 2002 it came out. I may have watched it 2004, 2005, I think, when about the time Revenge of the Sith came out. But I honestly don't think I've seen it since then. So, like you, I remember it being marginally better than The Phantom Menace. And so I'm going to give this a memory score of 4. But I do remember thinking, oh, it's not very good. But I also remember...
the script on this one isn't good.
Yeah, you were slightly older when we watched this. Not much older. You were 5 or 6, so a little bit older than when Phantom Menace came out. And you were much more engaged with this than you were. And maybe that's an age thing. But from my memory of watching the movie specifically with you, it's possible you thought it was the most amazing thing you'd ever seen at that point.
Yeah, probably, yeah. I mean, I'm looking forward to it this time around, I think.
Yeah, me too, actually. Because my view on Phantom Menace changed the second time I watched it. Or not the second, but from when I rewatched it. So, okay, so you gave it a...
3 out of 10.
And I gave it... 4, is that right?
4, that's right, yeah.
You might have to check that. So
that gives it 4.
That gives it a overall memory score of 3.5. So Sam and I will now go away and watch Star Wars Episode 2 Attack of the Clones, and we'll be back in about a week's time to let you know what we think about it. And if, by the way, you haven't heard any of our other previous episodes, they are available on all your favourite podcast platforms. You can follow us on Twitter. Sam, what's our Twitter username?
Twitter, it is The Benefit of Hindsight Podcast, or at TBO Hindsight Pod.
Nice and straightforward. And do give us a follow and a like, and do subscribe to our podcast. It'll be really, really good if you did. And of course, finally, email The Benefit of Hindsight Podcast at gmail.com. I think that's about everything from us this evening, Sam, don't you?
I think it is, yeah. Nothing else to say for me.
No. Okay, so as always, it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
I'll just check that I press record. I did!
Of hindsight, we'll see, were the movies truly awful, or did they change history?